You are welcome here because you are a beloved child of the universe. And that's all that matters. So I just have a couple of announcements. The first one is that today, after service, we are going to be talking about changes to Article 2. And if you don't know what Article 2 is, that is where the seven principles exist. And I think you each got a copy of the seven principles when you came in this morning. And the new language to Article 2. Which is a completely different kind of statement that puts love in the center and has values and covenants. So it's very different than the seven principles. And so after service, I'll talk a bit about that in the sermon, and I've talked about it a couple of times this year and a couple of times last year, and hopefully you each got the emails I sent home so you could study those things. And after the service down in Forest Hall, we're going to have a conversation where people can really tell each other what they're thinking about these statements, what's on their hearts about it. And so just grab a cup of coffee or tea and come into Forest Hall after the service. Meanwhile, if today's your first day or you've been come a couple of times and you want to fill out a visitor's form, those are in the back of your seat. And we have coffee after service and coffee online. Well, you don't get the coffee online, but you can click on a link and you can talk to other people while drinking coffee. And so we invite everybody to coffee hour with us. And now we have a stewardship moment from Rosie Hamilton.
Good morning. I want to thank all of you who have participated in the kickoff last week, and it was inspiring to see so many people engaged and excited about WOOF. In the coffee room downstairs, there's a stewardship poster on the wall showing our progress, and there's a QR code for making pledges and pledge cards available after the service. And as of now, we have $117,566. That's out of our goal of 200,000, right? 225,000. Not prepared. Thank you. Well, I want to share with you why I have been a woman.
Good morning.
Okay, here we go. I'm going to share with you why I have been here at WOOF for 48 years. We came from a very small fellowship in Cheyenne, Wyoming, and into a sanctuary filled with 50 people. I thought that was great. I wouldn't have to work anymore. What a foolish idea. WOOF has been my home ever since, and I've never looked back. I've been involved and worked in many capacities on many projects and committees. I was volunteer coordinator and office manager. I guess that you would call finding a home. Leap in to help. I worked on the budget committee, and our budget was $25,000. $25,000? Well, obviously, we have grown since then. Many more members, a minister, upgraded our E-wing. The entryway has been redone. Forest Hall is made. Our meeting room, remodeled downstairs, the coffee room. We have an RE director, a patio, chairs instead of wooden pews, for those of you who remember the wooden pews. We've done so much more in these last number of years. Therefore, our budget has grown, which is why we ask for pledges each year to support WOOF. As we've grown, so has my pledge. Each year at this time, I review the year and find a way to increase it. Each Sunday, after taking the offering, we say, we are grateful even for our needs, so that we may learn from the generosity of others. Well, this came home to me a few years ago when I broke my shoulder. Meals were delivered, shopping done, I was cared for. Our community helps when needed. How many of you have felt the generosity of others? Wow, I wish you could all see this. Almost everybody. I hope you will consider what you have received here and what you would like to see for others. WOOF is a gift. Consider how you can get involved. and how you too can support this wonderful fellowship during our pledge drive. Thank you.
So take a moment to say hi to the people around you. No extended conversation. Say hi to lots of people. Coffee is for extended conversation. Teal hymnals.
Times in our lives we have our pain, we all have sorrow, but if we are wise, we know that there's always tomorrow. Lean on me. When you're not strong, I'll be your friend. I'll help you carry on, for it won't be long, and I'm gonna need somebody to lean on. Somebody's gonna help, and if you're doing things you need to borrow, for no one can fill those of your needs that you won't let go. Lean on me when you're not strong, and I'll be your friend. I'll help you carry on, for it won't be long, and I'm gonna need somebody to lean on. If there is a load you have to bear that you can't carry, I'm right up the road. I'll share your load if you just call me. Lean on. You're not strong, and I'll be your friend. I'll help you carry on, for it won't be long, and I'm gonna need somebody to lean on. Well, I'm a brother, when we need a hand, we all need somebody.
To invite Paisley up to light the chalice. May love be the spirit of this congregation. May the quest for truth be its sacrament, and service be its prayer, to dwell together in peace, to seek knowledge in freedom, and to help one another in fellowship. This is our covenant. Let us say our opening affirmation. Let us open our eyes to see what is beautiful and what is wondrous. Let us open our minds to learn what is true and what is mysterious. Let us open our hearts to love ourselves and our neighbors. We will now sing Spirit of Life.
Spirit. Addressing earlier, generosity within our own community. And there are communities outside of our own that need our generosity as well. This quarter's Donate the Basket is the IMIRJ Sanctuary Fund. The Interfaith Movement for Immigrant Justice advocates with a collective of faith communities of which WIF is a part to respond actively and publicly to the suffering of our immigrant kin in the United States due to unjust immigration policies. Their sanctuary fund directly helps asylum seekers and refugees with food, rent, supplies, and other financial support. We all know how critical this is in this moment, so if the hosts could please come up, grab our baskets, I hope that we can be generous for this a worthy organization today. Thank you. Let's say again our affirmation of gratitude and giving. Oh, when we are able to give, for many do not have that privilege, let us be grateful for all those who share their gifts with us, for we are enriched by their giving. And let us be grateful even for our needs, so that we may learn from the generosity of others. And now, if our special music collective could come up. We have a little something from Mavis Staples today.
Let's see. Okay.
Everybody hot?
I'm tired of us living so lonely. I think I know just what to do. Gonna build a bridge right over the mountain. I'm gonna walk right over to you.
look around at our city. Look at us out on the street. Got kids looking over their shoulder. Got people looking down at their feet.
Well, I'm tired of us living so lonely. I hope I now know what to do. Gonna build a bridge right over the ocean. I'm coming right over to you. When I say my life matters, you can say yours does too. But I bet you never have to remind anyone till heaven comes over to you. Gonna build a bridge right over the mountain. Gonna build it right over the sea. Gonna build a bridge right over the ocean. So you can walk right over to me. I'm gonna pull the shades off of my window. I'm gonna let the sunlight in. I'm gonna open my heart to a stranger. I think I know where to begin. I'm gonna build a bridge right over the mountain. I think I know what to do. Gonna build a bridge right over the ocean. I'm gonna walk right over to you. 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 I'm gonna walk right over to you.
Invite any children up who would like to come up to the front for the story this morning. So our story this morning is There Really a Human Race? By Jamie Lee Curtis and illustrated by Laura Cornell. Is there really a human race? Is it going on now all over the place? When did it start? Who said, ready, set, go? Did it start on my birthday? I really must know. Do I warm up and stretch? Do I practice and train? Do I get my own coach? Do I get my own lane? Do I race in the snow? Do I race in a twister? Am I racing my friends? Am I racing my sister? If the race is a relay, is Dad on my team? And his dad and his dad? You know what I mean. Is the race like a loop or an obstacle course? Am I a jockey or am I a horse? Is there pushing and shoving to get to the lead? If the race is unfair, do I get to succeed? Do some of us win? Do some of us lose? Is winning or losing something I choose? Why am I racing? What am I winning? Does all of my running keep the world spinning? Do I get off track when I take the wrong turn? Do I make my way back from mistakes? Do I learn? Is it a sprint, a dash to the end? Am I aware of the time that I spend? And why do I do it, this million-yard dash? If we don't help each other, we're all going to crash. Sometimes it's better not to go fast. There are beautiful sights to see when you are last. Shouldn't it be that you just try your best, and that's more important than beating the rest? Shouldn't it be looking back at the end that you judge your own race by the help that you lent? So take what's inside you and make big, bold choices. And for those who can't speak for themselves, use bold voices. And make friends and love well, bring art to this place, and make the world better for the whole human race. Now we will now sing our children to their classes. Now is the time to just settle into your seats. We're going to take a moment of meditation, reflection, and prayer, or prayer, as is your tradition. And we're just going to start by breathing, if that feels comfortable to you. Breathing deeply isn't comfortable for everyone. And if that's not true, you can just kind of move your hands like breath. But meanwhile, if breath is comfortable, take a deep breath. Breathe into your belly. And breathe out slowly. And breathe in again. And breathe out slowly. And if you're sitting in this quiet space of meditation or reflection or prayer, I want you to consider the child in this morning's story had so many questions about how to live life. And often it's true that we have questions that we're asking ourselves about what's important, something that we're focusing on. So as you sit in this space, if it should come up for you, just think about what that is for you. And if it doesn't come up for you, just breathe. Now is time to consider and hold in our hearts the things that are joyful or the things that are hard in our own lives or the lives of the people around us. And in this community, we celebrate the joys and we hold and support people through the sorrows and hard times. And this morning in the service, I'm going to ask you if you want to come forward and place a stone in the water for something, for things that are joys in your life or things that you're holding in your sorrows. And the water represents this community of care. It represents this community of celebration. And I will be there with the microphone. And if you want to state a sentence or a few words about the joy or sorrow that you're holding right now, you're welcome to. And you're also welcome to just place the stones in silence. So take a moment, and as the music begins, come forward. And at the end, we're going to come out with the song 1053, How Can Anyone?
Remembering Costa Columbus.
Week I was able to learn, I had an opportunity to learn from the generosity of others. My cat, Freddie Mercury, was very, very ill, and I spent hours at Dove Lewis. And the next day we spent the next few hours at our own vet. And a dear friend of mine handed me a check to cover both bills this week.
This, but I'm thankful for Sue Body for helping me take care of the kids during the week. Very thankful.
And I too will place one last stone for our beloved, beloved member, Costa Columbus, who we all miss. We will now stay. You can stay seated. How can anyone?
This is from Grace Lee Boggs. Changes in small places affect the global system, not through incrementalism, but because every small system participates in an unbroken wholeness. In this exquisitely connected world, it's never a question of critical mass. It's always about critical connections. And this is from Howard Zinn. Missing from history are the countless small actions of unknown people that led up to these great moments. When we understand this, we can see that the tiniest acts of protest in which we engage may become the invisible roots of social change.
Someone I knew well once said to me, "Your project is well-being, and my project is success." And they meant project in an academic way, like the thing a person works on and finds to be the most important. Scholars have projects, particular questions they are drawn to, areas they attempt to uncover answers to and make discoveries about. And I think people have projects too. Questions about living life that we attempt to discover the answers to and live into, like the child in this morning's story, trying to figure out, what are we doing here together? And I would amend my friend's assessment of my project. I think that they had it right. But I think it isn't only how do I experience well-being, but also how do I create connections with people and with myself and with the wild world we live in. And I'm not always working on my projects in the same way. For example, I know both from experience and lots of reading that gratitude is one of the very best ways to create a sense of connection with others and with life. So I've been through periods of gratitude journaling and saying what I'm grateful for before meals or before I go to sleep. And then that fades out and I'm in a practice of presence where I meditate and I'm mindful when I eat and shower or walk or prepare food. My practices come and go. Some sustain, some don't sustain. But always in the center is this desire for well-being and deeper connections. That's my project. The person who made that comment has worked really hard on their project as well. They have had prestigious jobs. They've served on prestigious national committees in their field, and they move up the ladder in their profession every few years. The Enneagram is a personality typing system that I find particularly helpful in my own life. It is different than Myers-Briggs, which many of you may be familiar with, because Enneagram shares what each personality type typically has as a project, what they quest for, what they fear, what they hope most for, and then most helpfully offer suggestions on how to work through the challenges that your type brings and more fully live into the gifts that your type brings. Each type has a typical project, like type 2, it's connecting to and helping others. Type 5 is understanding and accumulating knowledge. Or type 7 is engaging in all the myriad of life experiences fully. And not surprisingly, my type correlates with projects of well-being and connection, and my friends with being valuable. And I think it's really useful for all of us to pay attention to whatever our project is, that glowing ember in the center that sparks our attention regularly, whatever it is, because we can get a lot of life satisfaction and meaning from living the questions that burn for us personally, making discoveries, and then exploring new questions. As you live into those discoveries, new questions arise, new practices to help you engage most meaningful for life as you live it, as you are, as your nervous system, as your personality wants and needs it to be lived. One hotly debated question in Unitarian Universalism has been, what is our project? Only we don't typically use that project language. We talk about the center. Is there something central to us as a people? Other traditions clearly state their centers. For Christians, it's the teachings of Jesus and or the doctrines of their particular branch of Christianity. For Buddhists, it's meditation, the Four Noble Truths, and the Eightfold Path. For pagans, it's the cycles of nature. For humanists, it's ethics and rationality. But what about Unitarian Universalism? In 2005, the UU Commission on Appraisal, which is asked every few years to study an area of importance to Unitarian Universalism, did a study of this very question called Engaging Our Theological Diversity. After doing surveys and focus groups and engaging in conversations with many leaders, they wouldn't say. They did say if there was a center, it would probably be love, but suggested, as many of these ports end up doing, that we should have some more conversations about it, which is advice UUs are typically very happy to engage in. So I'm sure most of you are aware that by now that Unitarian Universalists are in a conversation about stating our statement of purpose, from a set of 7 principles to a statement of 6 values. That, 20 years after that report, bravely offers a central concern for Unitarian Universalism. They place love at the center. The new language reads, love is the power that holds us together and is at the center of our shared values. So why do this? Why claim a center to our faith after many years of resisting such a thing? We are a living tradition. It says it right on your gray hymnals. We are a living tradition, and we change. And that is the most basic answer. The more complicated answer, of course, is about how and why we change. And I believe our tradition offers up examples of what our society and our culture does next. It's those small actions that were mentioned in today's readings, those small acts. We're often a center of those things in our society. Our faith, while fairly small in numbers of people, is very large and open, and so much is possible within our faith. So what we often do is focus our attention for a particular time, and once we focus on something for a while, often 50 to 100 years, we internalize it, and then we move on to the next thing. Our very earliest ancestors, the Puritans, were focused on a new form of religious community, the covenantal community. They were so focused on it that they came to the United States and created the United States that we have because they wanted it to be a place where you could have free churches. That's literally what happened. Most of our leaders were Unitarian, actually, early in the United States. And now covenant is foundational to this faith. It is absolute bedrock. The next generations of Unitarians focused on the ideals of freedom, tolerance, and reason. And they believed that people could transform through reasoned learning to be better people. Learning, freedom, tolerance, and reasons are foundational to us. The Transcendentalists, who were next, focused on the idea that we could each experience divinity in the world, particularly through nature. And personal experience as a way of knowing truth is foundational to us. The next generation of Unitarians moved away from Christianity and often the idea of God altogether and many congregations became fully humanist, including this one. Humanist ideas of ethics and meaning without a personal God are absolutely foundational to us. The Universalists have always believed that every person, no matter what, is worthy of love and they're worthy of forgiveness. That we are all worthy and lovable is foundational to us. And by foundational, I mean foundation, bedrock, firm, hard, the actual ground we walk on. Each generation has taken that huge religious space that is Unitarian Universalism and tended to a particular project and made it bedrock. And then we walk on that ground toward a new project. Unitarian Universalists have nearly always pushed back against current societal ideas of what a religion should be. Our ancestors said we could learn and reason when emotional conversion was highly popular during the Great Awakening. That group of Unitarians actually was pretty adverse to that whole emotional come to the altar awakening thing that was happening all over America. And next were the Transcendentalists, and they taught that divinity is everywhere, and we each have the capacity to experience at a time when most believed that the Bible was the only source of knowledge of the divine. Humanists grew at a time when society virtually required attending church. Unitarians said, we like church, we like community, but God isn't necessary. Doctrine isn't necessary. People can be moral and engaged with life without God. These focuses, our projects, have often pushed against the culture in ways that have helped open up possibilities for everyone in society. We weren't the only people, except maybe the Transcendentalists, who were doing those things, but we were a major force in those changes. When humanism was growing, almost 70% of Americans went to a church where God was central. Today, only a third of Americans are regular churchgoers, and a third are atheists or agnostics. For more than a century, not having anything at the center of our tradition was important, because really our project, our center, was the individual freedom of belief. We focused on using reason and science as a way to understand the world. We pushed back against social standards and were part of successful social change to make those ideas acceptable across the United States. Even though at any of those times, at any of those moments, we were all never one thing. Those were the projects that the faith was working on as a tradition, but people were all doing their own things as well. So while humanists was central to many congregations during the 20th century, others, people were there. There were theists and Christians and Buddhists, the generally spiritual questing, but they were more at the edges of practice and conversation. Unitarian Universalism has been transforming as a faith for the last 30 or 40 years, the years that the principles have sort of held that space of articulating who we are. And during that time, the unchurched, pagans, Buddhist, multi-religious families, mystics, and so many others have joined, drawn by an open and caring religious community. And I would say that during those years, what's really risen as our project was social action and social justice. And we can see this in our current seven principles, which mention things like democracy and justice and world peace. The new statement, which you all got a copy of when you came in today, and we will talk in more depth about later, still mentions all those layers of bedrock, our tradition built over the last centuries. Covenant is there. Reason, the inherent worth and dignity of every person, which comes out of that Universalist teaching that we are all lovable and forgivable. and freedom of belief and conscience. Then it makes love our newest central project, upheld by six values: pluralism, justice, equity, transformation, interdependence, and generosity. Those are the six values. Love and these values all point toward the importance of relationships. They are about interconnection and interbeing. It's a very important to say that love in this statement does not refer to love as a feeling. And if you read it that way, it will just be confusing. It refers instead to love as action. Love in this context means using your life energy for the well-being of both yourself and others. It is the love preached by Jesus, by Martin Luther King Jr., and by Gandhi. The new statement focuses on ways we might act for the well-being of everyone. And I personally believe this is the necessary next project of Unitarian Universalism. UUs have focused on individual expression and freedom in our religious practices for about a century now. Our society has upheld individualism as the most fulfilling project for human life, particularly during the last part of the 20th century and the first part of the 21st. And in many ways, this has been truly wonderful and freeing. People have been able to move out of narrow traditional roles and ways of being human. We have all benefited from wider acceptability of life paths. But women, people of color, and LGBTQI+ people have particularly benefited from this sense that we all are individuals and need to live our individual lives as we truly are. But in many ways, we have just swung that pendulum too far. Our practices of extreme individualism are literally killing us. Loneliness is at an all-time high, with devastating health and mental health effects. Our societal goal that each person should live in comfort in whatever style we want, without asking anybody for help ever, uses so many resources that it is destroying the environment that our life evolved with. As humans, we need to relearn how we live interconnected lives with each other and the natural world. We need to keep all the best benefits of individualism and weave ourselves back together in an interconnected web. And this task is of critical importance. But there are arguments against naming a center and arguments against naming that center as love. Some disagree with making love central because love itself is problematic. The word can mean different things to different people at any time. Love can be warm and fuzzy, like hugs or babies or puppies. Love can be passionate, like new romance, and love can be fierce, demanding the well-being of all, as was preached by Martin Luther King Jr., Gandhi, and Jesus. And meanwhile, most of us, all of us, have been hurt by love. Our hearts have been broken. We were betrayed. Or we were taught that love means to sacrifice ourselves for someone else, and we've done it. Women have particularly been taught this message, that to love well means we must put at the center of our lives the well-being of everyone else, and it doesn't matter what happens to us. Sort of the dire children's book example of that, and I'm sorry if you love this book, is The Giving Tree by Shel Silverstein, which I used to love and think was so great, until I realized at the end the tree, like, dies giving herself to this person she loves, this boy, which is not great. And I don't know why I loved it, but many of us did. Some versions of Christianity teach, and some versions of Christianity, which we all come out of in our culture, teaches that to love like Jesus means to suffer sacrificially. That's what it means to follow Jesus, is you follow him to the cross, not all this other stuff about loving the poor and that. So we each bring the lens of our personality and our experiences to our understanding of that word, love. And this means that when I say love, something different happens in each and every one of your minds, which is not happening in everybody else's minds, which makes communication somewhat difficult. And part of this is simply a discipline of the practice of definitions. When we talk about here, love, in this sanctuary, what we really mean is love in action, acting for the well-being of others, not the emotion we feel for those who are closest to us. The other part of grappling with this word love at the center is about discernment. Love isn't something where we all agree one thing is the loving thing to do. That's never going to happen, and we're never going to agree on that. And every situation is actually quite different. You can't know sort of up front, like there's not a list of this is the loving way to be in this interaction. It's always discernment, every time. And we actively, because of this cultural idea of love as self-sacrifice, have to actively resist that. I mean, sometimes we do choose self-sacrifice for love. Just think about parents in the first year of a baby's life. I mean, that's pretty self-sacrificial, but people choose to do it because the benefits outweigh the cost, or at least they thought so before they had the baby. And usually almost always think so afterwards, truly. And there are people who allow themselves to be beaten in nonviolent protests, and they make that self-sacrificing decision by choice. And love must be a choice. And the benefits and costs of any action must be weighed. Love can't be taken lightly. And this is one of the conversations that this new language calls us into having. So what about the argument that Unitarian Universalists should not make anything central because it infringes on individual freedom of belief or on our individual spiritual and personal growth projects? And I simply don't think it does. We can all work on our own projects, and should be, while still paying attention to how we balance our individual needs and desires with the interconnectedness of others. And I would argue it's what we already do here at WOOF. We are an amazing, supportive congregation. We've already heard some of that today. We listen to each other, which is an amazing gift in American society. We reach out towards each other with support. We have created this congregation for each other so that we all have community. Putting love at the center is a way to articulate what is happening already so we are able to offer greater attention to that work, to have the discernment conversations, to have the conversations about practices that we might do. And I think this is a really important point, that this new statement in Article 2 in the bylaws of the Unitarian Universalist Association is not a personal statement of belief or covenant. We don't have creeds. We are not going to have creeds. We don't have creeds. And that purpose statement isn't an agreement that each and every Unitarian Universalist has to promote and affirm and agree with. It's an agreement, and it says right in there, this is between congregations. This is congregations, this congregation as a whole, and other congregations saying, yeah, yep, this project makes sense for right now. Let's do this for a while and see what happens. This is literally what it is. We're supposed to relook at it in 15 years. We could just be like, yeah, that was not work, did not work for us. And we can do something else. It's possible it takes us forever. I mean, this particular statement will have taken 5 years since the inception till it's voted on in June to sort of pull it all together. But, you know, we do it. We do change. Meanwhile, individuals, each of you, is free in our faith to connect with and live the values and follow the paths that make sense to them.
as long as they are kind. We don't really allow everything. You do need to be kind. You do need to respect other people and those kinds of things. But generally, most paths are open. And if the seven principles is still that for you, that's great. And if you articulate what this tradition means to you in an entirely different way, that's fine. That is part of the diversity and the difference we are trying to live out together in this two statements. How do we do it well? I think it's hard because a lot of times we feel like when there's difference, we can't belong to each other. And I think learning how to actually belong to each other when we're really different is radically difficult. And it's radically worth figuring out how to do well. And this statement offers values and covenants that are approaches to this challenge of loving well, of interconnection through difference. Because I truly believe, like Grace Lee Boggs and Howard Zinman in this morning's readings, and Jamie Lee Curtis in this morning's story, that it is small acts. It's the connections we make to with each other. It's the small systems, like Wolf, that are well done, that lay the foundation for those large changes that are so necessary in our society. The world systems based on resource extraction, corporate capitalism, consumerism, and individualism are hurting us, and they are breaking. And something new is going to arise. We don't know what it is. But how we respond, Unitarian Universalism responds, Wolf responds, will make a difference in what happens next. I believe that we so desperately need to figure out as a society how to create interconnected, loving relationships across radical differences. We need to build bridges to each other. And for me, that means putting love at the center of this tradition. It means putting our hearts in a holy place and discovering what happens next. May it be so. We will now rise and sing 1008, when our heart is in a holy place.
We are blessed with love and amazing grace.
ask you to go forth into the world with your heart in a holy place, building bridges to one another. We extinguish our flame, but not the warmth and love of our community. We will now, the front will face the back, and we will sing our closing hymn.